interrupting the current neo-Yukaronial, climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 639. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed. And then you can help yourself at that point. Bring those miscreants behind the woodshed. Show them what they've done wrong and expect that they don't do it again. Bring your own accountability. We don't see much of that out there, do we? It's something that seems to be feigning is accountability. And I'm hoping it does work through. I guess I need to say, it may sound like I'm dubious that this is going to happen, but I do hope that a lot of this does happen. Not that it's going to, but we never know. We can hope beyond hope. At some point, something I think does have to break, but it's usually only the low-hanging fruit. At any rate, in this case, with all the let-em-eat chaos going on, and the potential for all the cover-ups, the cat-bot cover-ups that we're finding and seeing, John Ratcliffe reveals hidden intel in upcoming Durham report. So we get to feel intrigued now about this. Again, it may sound like I'm a little bit dismissive, and I am a bit, but we don't know what's going to finally maybe break. Maybe all the pressure that we're putting on these people will finally make them think maybe they better do something finally. Someone's going to have to be looking at this correctly. And I think this may be the first indication that there's something going a little more correctly than it had been. It doesn't eliminate the potential problems, but at least we're seeing the actions are a little bit more consistent with what you might think ought to go on. CIA Director John Ratcliffe is expecting criminal indictments against top names in Barack Obama's administration for allegedly conspiring against President Donald Trump and the American people with the Russian collusion hoax. And he says more information is about to be declassified. And all I can say is Trump is determining that the Epstein matter is a hoax. Maybe they should put the same amount of time into that. And then, like as I said, let's go do the forensics on all the background of that. It's not about the client list, actually. It's about how to prove out how he existed and who his contacts were and what untoward type of influence may they have had on the government. Appearing on Sunday Morning Futures with Maria Bartiromo of the Fox News channel, Ratcliffe said of potential indictments, quote, "That's why I've made the referrals that I have DNI. Gabbard has made referrals as well." So, again, this is not, like, I want to make sure that we understand how this is working. They're making out real claims of that didn't have the authority. This guy's saying he's making a referral. And so we're looking a little bit better here. They're not taking claims and making claims. At least he's not quite yet. "We're going to continue to share the intelligence that would support the ability of our Department of Justice to bring fair and just claims against those who have perpetrated this hoax against the American people and this stain on our country." Quote, "There's no doubt in my mind," Ratcliffe explained, "they conspired against President Trump. They conspired against the American people, and so I'll leave it to Pam Bondi and our Department of Justice, Kash Patel, and our FBI to investigate the conspiracy to do what and what charges that they are capable of bringing." So there's the first indication I've seen that at least someone knows the organization, the hierarchy of how you go about doing something. Not that I have much faith in where they're going at this point, but the point is we're seeing something that hadn't been done that I noticed hadn't been done for quite a while, a proper course. And I suspect that proper course may lead to more proper things. So I'm not sure what more there is to comment on this. This is what should have been going on all the time instead of the showboating accusations that have been going on. Sending information to the proper authority for investigation and if warranted prosecution is exactly what he should be doing. He shouldn't come out and make his claims. And in a way, it's almost premature. He shouldn't have made those claims, but I'll take a little bit at this as we can see. But then again, this administration hasn't been much different on the accountability spectrum as any other. So we'll have to see. And just for the record, I'm not holding my breath. And in an interesting article that was written by someone, I appreciate his authorship. And today I'm going to read a bit of his, all of his article that was printed. It's written by Tariq Cyril Amar in Trump's revenge and retaliation nature that now we're starting to see. And I'm getting a little bit concerned. Just to forget all the pomp and ceremony about somebody, in this case the President of the United States. I've told you I'm concerned about people who got the jab. I'm concerned that they're going to be having health outcomes that we may not be able to predict, and they may not know about. And I'm starting to wonder, this is what underlies this discussion right here, that Tariq does not touch on, but I just want you to know that I've been looking at some of these things that are coming on in the retaliation and revenge that's just not warranted in, either with Trump. And I'm just wondering how much that's playing into this problem. But the Turk goes on to say, and touching this Russiagate revenge and the rotten core of U.S. power. The years-long deception maintained by the highest level U.S. officials has been put to rest, though not for the sake of justice and democracy. Be real, it's not hard to see that America, as it really exists, not the dream version, is neither a democracy nor a country with genuine rule of law. That's because a democracy worth the label is impossible, for starters, with the election awash in private money and a bizarre electoral college making sure that Americans do not actually have votes of even numerically equal weight when electing their single most powerful officials, the president. The rule of law can only exist where citizens are equal before laws that apply to everyone in the same just manner. This is a challenge everywhere, but the United States is an almost comical, egregious case of legal bias obscurantism, masquerading as limitlessly reinterpretable case law, and inequality by status, wealth, ethnicity, and skin color. Just ask the crackhead, porn addict, and shady businessman from an infamous clan who is currently not in prison but giving expletive-laden interviews instead. The U.S., simply put, does not operate the way it claims to operate. It takes an extraordinary amount of naivete on the scale of believing Santa Claus or an honest Vladimir Zelensky not to notice that much. What is more difficult to figure out is how politics and power actually do work in America, and most of all, who is really in charge? In interjecting on this article, you see the concepts that he's coming up with in one article. I've been questioning and offering information and observations and things like that over many, many, many broadcasts, just relative to Trump, and you know it's been ongoing behind the woodshed. And this is the analysis that needs to be done. He comes up with all this stuff on his own in his article from afar, and so I, again, put a lot of credit in people who are thinking about what's going on. And essentially, you're really trying to figure things out. You're really attempting to make sense of what's this nonsense, essentially. We have, for example, we recently witnessed a presidency in which a severely senescent Joe Biden claimed to be, but clearly could not be, in command. So who was? And who was in general? That ultimately is perhaps the single most disturbing question raised by recent developments around the rotting corpse of Russiagate, a.k.a. Russia Rage. In its heyday between 2016 and 2020, Russiagate was the shorthand for a conspiracy theory that dominated U.S. politics and mainstream media, causing mass hysteria. Its details were exceedingly complicated, but its core was extremely simple. The claims that Russia had manipulated the American presidential election in 2016, that it had done so to facilitate the first victory of Donald Trump, and finally, that Donald Trump's team had colluded with Russia. The power of this preponderantly factually false and entirely misleading narrative was such that it overshadowed much of Donald Trump's first presidency and contributed greatly to a catastrophic and very dangerous decline in the always challenging relationship with Russia. Indeed, there even is a plausible connection to be made between the mass madness of Russiagate and the reckless policy of provoking and waging a proxy war against Russia in Ukraine. Russiagate, in other words, did not only harm the United States, it harmed the whole world. I see these things interject. What happened to the great Covey swindle? And Trump was the center of that also, but it was his hand that did that. His order, I suppose. The article goes on to say, in that respect, think of it as a political equivalent of the 2008 U.S. banking crisis. The mess was American, the fallout global. Now Trump is back for a second term and bent on revenge against the detractors, not only but especially over Russiagate. In his usual refreshingly candid style, he has announced that, quote, it is time to go after people, close quote, fingered former President Barack Obama for treason, and gleefully shared the AI-generated video showing Obama being arrested in the White House. Just before that typical Trump outburst, his Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, released a freshly declassified report produced in 2017 by Intelligence Committee of House of Representatives that addresses what really happened in 2016 when Russiagate was initially invented. This release was clearly meant to be a sensation. Gabbard accompanied it with press statements and detailed thread of ex-posts bringing out its most explosive aspects. Among them, the key findings is that Russia did not work to make Trump president. Boom! The basis of Russiagate gone. Just like that. And who was to blame? Gabbard made clear that the Russiagate was not a cluster fiasco born of mere incompetence, but a monster intentionally produced and carefully nurtured. She accused the top national security officials, including FBI Director James Comey, CIA Director John Brennan, Director of National Intelligence James Clapper, as well as Obama himself, of deliberately creating and spreading the impression of Russia election meddling in favor of Trump by manipulating the actual contradictory findings of the intelligence agencies. Gabbard used strong language. A coup against Trump, the weaponization of intelligence. I want you to remember that phrase, weaponization of intelligence, the weaponization of just about everything anymore. A treasonous conspiracy and a betrayal concerning every American. Those mainstream media, such as New York Times, that are among the worst offenders in spreading Russiagate hoax, have already pounced on this language to, in essence, poo-pooing Gabbard's charges as hyperbolical, but don't fall for that deflection. Gabbard's way of presenting her case does have a political edge. Of course it does. Duh. And if they wish, the old Russiagaters can nitpick over her terms to their heart's content. But that makes no difference to the fact that what has happened is an enormous blight on U.S. politics implicating the intelligence services as well as other state agencies, the media, and indeed former President Obama. Gabbard may be laying it on a little thick, or not actually, but even without an embellishment, the fabrication of Russiagate was the real humongous scandal, and it must be dealt with at long last. It is always satisfying to see a big fat lie punctured and deflated, but there is, unfortunately, little reason to celebrate. For one thing, it is unlikely that many of those who concocted and spread Russiagate will actually face real consequences. That is just not how the U.S. works. Its elites have a record of impunity only rivaled by those of Israel. Obama, in particular, is certain to be safe. Ironically, he is now protected by the same extraordinary legal privilege that the Supreme Court has conjured up for Trump. In one respect, even New York Times has a point. One reason for all, at least the timing of escalation in Trump's revenge campaign, is that it is meant to distract us from that other horrific scandal associated with the name of convicted pedophile, suspected intelligence agent and blackmailer, and very, very dubious suicide victim, Jeffrey Epstein. The same Trump officials now in high dungeon over Russiagate have shown no independence of mind, professionalism, or commitment to truth and the public welfare when helping Trump evade full transparency for the Epstein files, in which his name also appears. Even while revealing the Russiagate was a hoax, Gabbard and the House intelligence report she had declassified still tried to blame Moscow. It's a tricky operation. Now we are supposed to stop accusing Russia and its President Vladimir Putin of helping Trump and Trump for profiting from such help, but we are still asked to believe that they had nothing better to do than, quote, undermine faith in the United States democratic process. Where to even begin? There is no democratic process in a plutocratic U.S. Even a Princeton University study has long acknowledged that America is not a democracy. In reality, there's only an obstinate and frankly brazen pretense of such a process, and maybe some people still believe in it. But it really does not take Russia or any other outside forces to make sure that that many do not. That loss of faith in a thing that isn't there is entirely made in America. I need to interject here. You understand, I also don't agree with his statement there about democracy. I can hear all my listeners that pay attention and have done their study saying that we're not in a democracy. And that's true. And as I've said in prior broadcasts, democracy is a weapon, literally a weapon, and that the intelligence agencies use against us as well as others. So when we hear what he's writing and observing, we keep our own thoughts as well, but I thought he pulled this together fairly well to give an overview, a real quick overview, and some of the truths behind what's going on, again, to give us an idea and to notice that there's other things that have to be done. They're not going to be so easy to fix, and it's going to take a bit of a work to figure how that's going to work and get things to work out, if we so choose. Maybe one day American establishment of all flavors will learn to stop childishly blaming others, be it their predecessors, who usually deserve it, or foreigners who often don't deserve it, and face its very own responsibility. But I would not bet on it. Cowardice, careerism, and hypocrisy run too deep. Most likely there will never be true justice, only tit-for-tat retaliation. On the other hand, if that's the only thing on offer, bring it on. I, for one, will take it. And so we see here at the end, whatever tool we can use to fight the battle, you do. You take it on and you use it. So I thought that's very interesting observations, pretty clear, fairly along the lines of what I've talked about for a long time. And these things are very, very important. And we see the players, for their reason, whatever reasons they are, or not, to do whatever's going on. The people in decision, in places of privacy that have these answers and who are bringing that out now in those places, the replacements to bring out and change this. And I want us to remember, it's still showing and still going on. There's a reorganization going on. And so we can focus on all the stuff that happened. It's not unimportant. It has to be solved. But don't forget, it's just altering its cover right now, even under Trump. For as many people that may want to stop listening when I say that, that is the truth. And anybody who's not paying attention to that is missing it. Or you're willfully blind. And there's no excuse for that, actually. It's something that we don't have to wait to see or hold our breath over. The response to the latest ever flip-flopping, increasingly impotent demands coming out of the ultimatum stand. Russia takes note of Trump's 10 to 12 day ultimatum on Ukraine peace deal. On Monday, Trump said that he may announce a new deadline for the Ukraine peace deal, ranging from 10 to 12 days, quote, tonight or tomorrow, adding that unless the deal is made, he will introduce sanctions and secondary tariffs against Russia. Quote, we have taken note of President Trump's statement yesterday, Peskov told reporters, adding that Russia remains committed to the peace process to resolve the conflict in Ukraine and ensure its national interests. Now, gotta keep highlighting this. This has never been a question. Trump shouldn't treat it like it's a question. What they're saying right there has been said from before this thing got started, and no one's paid attention or listened, the least of which Trump. And this is, again, questioning Trump now. What's going on with this guy? What's going wrong with this guy? Is it health? Or is he just some egomaniac? And there's going to be hard pressed to go either, to make a decision either way without having more information. But again, all then we can go on does he support, truly support what he does? Because we have to look at those deeds. Early in July, Trump said that he will impose 100% secondary tariffs against Russia if no deal on the Ukraine conflict is reached in the next 50 days. So then he got insulted again. He's going to kick it down just to 10 or 15. He'll make that up as he goes. And this is going to be his problem in the ultimatum states of America stand. There's not much of an art towards making deals, especially if there is no offer they can't refuse. And I think this is a big blind spot that's going on right now. I've suggested this a long time ago. A lot of the more capable nations were, had had it, enough is enough. They were taking steps over a decade ago, as I pointed them out as they were coming, to prepare for this, and they weren't going to allow themselves to be brought under by bullying. They were going to go their own way, and you're watching what's going on, although I've added more as to why. It's not really a separation. It's not really as getting away from the world, if being of the world. It's, that's what has to happen to continue those things of the world. And so there's the other aspect that Trump's helping to force this, and Russia and China are taking advantage, as they would, in order to move that future forward. Medvedev tells Trump Russia isn't Israel. In the pushback here, the former Russia president warned the U.S. leader against issuing threats and ultimatums when dealing with Moscow. Former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev has told U.S. President Donald Trump that Russia is neither Israel nor Iran, and that every one of his threats is another step towards a potential conflict. The U.S. president on Monday issued a more extreme ultimatum to Russia, demanding that Moscow reach a ceasefire with Kiev within 10 or 12 days. Earlier this month, Trump threatened sweeping secondary sanctions against Russia's trade partners unless a deal was reached by autumn. Medvedev, who serves as deputy chairman of the Russian Security Council, said that Trump's playing with the ultimatum game with Russia, 50 days or 10, he should remember two things. One, Russia isn't Israel or even Iran. Two, each new ultimatum is a threat and a step towards war, not between Russia and Ukraine, but with his own country. Don't go down the Sleepy Joe road. During his election campaign last year, Trump repeatedly criticized his predecessor Joe Biden's handling of the Ukraine conflict, warning the U.S. policy under the former administration had brought the world to the brink of World War III. In a post on X on Monday, he suggested Trump should remember two things, that Russia isn't Israel or even Iran, and that every new ultimatum constitutes a threat toward hostilities between Russia and the U.S. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has said that although Russia is essentially fighting a war against the entire West on its own, it will not back down for its key security demand in the conflict. I want to continue reminding us on this. This has never been a question, ever. And so we take that answer that from Medvedev to Trump in that context. And I don't see where Trump should have taken it the way he did, why I start to question Trump himself. Lavrov says, no dragging Ukraine into NATO, no NATO expansion at all. It has already expanded right up to our borders. So the art of ultimatum stand is not having the desired effect for temper Trump Don. And this has becomes a continuing problem. It starts to escalate. And when we see where this starts, it's even more ridiculous. And Trump responds to Medvedev with nukes, of all things. The head of the White House ordered the dispatch of two nuclear submarines to the Russian border. Quote, in connection with the provocative statements of Medvedev, who is currently the deputy chairman of the Russian Security Council, I have ordered the deployment of two nuclear submarines in the relevant areas in case these stupid and provocative statements turn out to be something more, Trump wrote on his social networks. So who's shaking the nuclear cudgel now? And all of this is all from what Medvedev was responding, actually starts out before all this. And Trump escalated it up to nuclear submarines. So what's Trump expect those nuclear submarines to do now in the right places? Is Russia going to change? Besides, Trump also said, we're ready for nuclear war. And that shouldn't have even been a question, really, should it? Does he have to say this stuff like this? And Medvedev's comment that started this was actually trolling Lindsey Graham. So why is Trump responding through an ex-Twitter, no less, to protect Flimsy? Lindsey is a big girl now, isn't he? It's pretty embarrassing when you get trolled so hard that you go to nukes. Now, to expect the subs weren't already on the Russian coast, too? What desperate nonsense Trump is resorting to. And other actions. You know, it's sanity is repeating the same mistake and expecting different results. In this case, other actions by Trump. Insanity in repeating the imposition of weaponized sanctions and expecting different results. Doesn't seem any different to me. Again, questioning what is really going on in Trump. And that's unless, of course, Trump is advancing the extortionate and coercive global gulag financial system and the future that they want against us. And in that regard, Trump is then only an apprentice in the devil's workshop, doing as he is told, and none of which is going to make America great again, if it was ever great. And if we look back through the history, we wonder, was it really a tool? For those of you that are doing the studies, you can confirm or deny that or give me some more information. That's what my findings are. And I'm just wondering, as I started to consider what's going on and the types of responses Trump is giving, and they're unsupportable. I'll come up to a couple tabs here. Now, where I was questioning whether he knew or not, he admits he doesn't know what he's doing. He admits he doesn't know what he's agreeing to. But for now, we saw aides covering up Biden's cognitive dysfunction. And with Trump slashing out and his unstable thrashing about, I'm wondering which aides in Trump's administration that are doing that for him today. And I don't say that just to be saying it. Oh, look, let's be spectacular about this, sensational. No, he has no reasons behind what he says. He just repeats himself, and that's another type of sign, too. You've got nothing else but simple words to put together and repeat them. So India's response to this ultimatum, Stan. India responds to Trump's 25% tariff by vowing to secure the interests of farmers and businesses while continuing to engage in trade talks with Washington. Hours after U.S. President Donald Trump announced the 25% tariff on Indian goods, New Delhi said it would take all steps necessary to secure the interests of its domestic players. Quote, India and the U.S. have been engaged in negotiations on concluding a fair, balanced, and mutually beneficial bilateral trade agreement over the last few months. We remain committed to that objective, the Indian Minister of Commerce said in a statement. An interim deal was reached by the negotiators on both sides, and it appears it was presented to Trump. And Trump took a position that it was not enough, and that most of the Indian market was to be open, former Indian Foreign Secretary Kanwal Sibal noted in an interview. He added that he had anticipated that the U.S. leader would not give India an easy deal after he managed what he called one-sided deals with EU and Japan, calling Trump's approach pressure tactics. The former diplomat also countered Trump's statement that the U.S. does little business with India, noting that Washington and New Delhi's largest trade partner, with bilateral turnover crossing $132 billion Bravo dollars in the last financial year. So $132 billion doesn't sound like nothing. So is Trump a pathological liar on top of all this? Is that the takeaway regarding the art of the deal, being a pathological liar? And from someone that admits he doesn't know a thing about the things he agrees to, like the CMS monitoring and tracking system, your government-sponsored public-private Siberian gulag care system, where M is monitoring, making, A is assessment, and T is tracking, are part of the foreign SMART method of sustainable oppression, as are ensuring the R resilient of the T transformation, protecting the gulag system, not your health, don't you know? He admits he doesn't know about it and admits he won't want anyone to know about his health through that system either. He doesn't want to participate with it. But he thinks it's a good idea for you. He admits he doesn't know what he is agreeing to. He sounds at least jab harm to me, now suffering venous insufficiency to his brain, likely, and he admitted he was jab-boosted. So a sick commander-in-chief is making important decisions about the future of your disease is not going to make America great again, but it will profit your future digital panopticon wardens. Right-thinking people in other countries don't want anything more to do with him or his arbitrary capriciousness or of this country if they can help it. If Trump is allowing the vampire squid to wrap its tentacles around the throat of we the people, he and they are an existential threat and more dire than any nation abroad that can avoid that predator. It was Caldwell in his 1965 book, A Pillar of Iron, attributing, it appears, to a fictional characterization of a speech by Cicero that nevertheless seems axiomatic, that warned, a nation can survive its fools and even the ambitious, but it cannot survive treason from within. Yeah, Trump and the vampire squid is kind of like that. A nation can survive its fools and even the ambitious, but it cannot survive the treason from within. An enemy at the gates is less formidable, for he is known and he carries his banner openly against the city. But the traitor moves among those within the gates freely, his sly whispers rustling through all the alleys, heard in the very halls of government itself. For the traitor appears no traitor. He speaks in the accents familiar to his victims, and he wears their face and their garments, and he appears to their baseness, to lies that lies deep in the hearts of all men. He rots the soul of the nation. He works secretly and unknown in the night to undermine the pillars of a city. He infects the body politic so that it can no longer resist. A murderer is less to be feared. The traitor is the carrier of the plague. This is a plague traveling at warp speed, apparently, for it, as fast as the Siberian gulag is being built, and to suck all your life's blood, all your life's energy from cradle to grave, or recycled into Solent Green, I suppose, as we're told into the future, that documentary. You do realize the profiteers will have your DNA, don't you, as they pull this together? And don't forget, India also was issuing those pharmaceuticals, remember? And they got caught. Their companies weren't so good. So don't underestimate this problem potentially going on. When Trump said there was no business, you should have known, wait a minute, we do a lot of business in the pharmaceuticals, those pharmaceuticals that come out. So these profiteers through all this system Trump doesn't know about, he agrees to, as we're coming onto a story, a new thing that's just come onto the scene, that's already been worked out, already been engaged. You'll maintain that possession of that DNA until it's altered by the next required CMS AI-assisted medical intervention through private innovation. Right, Trump? You know that, right? No, you don't know anything. Who am I asking? You don't know a thing, do you? You don't know a thing about any of it that you're talking about. He don't know nothing. Right, Sergeant Schultz? What am I talking about on this? Just hear it from himself. I'm going to play. I don't do this too much. I hope it turns out. I'm going to play Trump's own voice. Listen to what he says. He's just reading from a script. He'll admit he doesn't know what he's agreeing to. He looks over, defers to the Wicked of Oz, and says, this is good, right? And they say, yes. He goes, okay, good. I'm glad I'm agreeing with it. I want you to hear this, because this is the way this guy is deciding lots of things. It's not just this.
But with today's announcement, we take a major step to bring healthcare into the digital age, something that is absolutely vital. We've got to do it. Moving from clipboards and fax machines into a new era of convenience, profitability, and speed, and frankly, better health for people. Under the leadership of Administrator Oz, we're officially launching the CMS Digital Health Tech Ecosystem to give healthcare providers, insurers, and software companies the tools they need to empower Americans with a 21st century experience on health. The key breakthrough we've made is getting many of the biggest names in the healthcare and technology to agree to industry-wide standards for electronic medical records. All of those great companies that you just heard have gotten together with this group of very brilliant people. I think I don't know who's more brilliant, them or them. I don't know. Could be them. I hate to tell you. It could very well be them. But I don't know. I'm going to take my team. But the key breakthrough we've made is getting many of the biggest names in healthcare and technology to agree to that those standards of electronic medical records that we talk about and you've heard about for so many years, and now it's happening. This will allow patients to easily transmit information from one doctor to another, even if they're different networks and using different record-keeping systems. No matter what system they use, they're all transferable. The new standards will also make it simple for patients to access their own personal health records. I don't want to see mine, please. I don't want to see. I don't know about you. They have all sorts of things, sir. They can tell you exactly what your problem is going to be in 6 years. We can do it. You know, they have all these different things. I don't know if they work or not, but I didn't want to hear it. I didn't want to hear it. If they got a problem, I don't want to know about it right now. But it is amazing what they're doing. I don't know. Does it actually work? Can they do that? All right. Well, then I'm glad I said I don't want to know. But thanks to this announcement, healthcare providers across the country will also finally be able to kill the clipboard. It's an expression that's used, capital, with a capital C, kill the clipboard. Instead of filling out the same tedious paperwork at every medical appointment, patients will simply be able to grant their doctors access to their records at the push of a button. Just a button and you're all set, and all the information the doctor needs will be immediately transmitted. The system will be entirely opt-in, and there will be no centralized government-run database, which everyone is always concerned about. I'm less concerned than anybody. I say whatever it is, it is. But people are very, very concerned about the personal records. They want to keep them very quiet, and that's their choice. I think it's a great thing because it will be. It'll be absolutely quiet. Instead, doctors and patients will always remain in control. The benefits to millions of Americans will be enormous. We will save time, we'll save money, and most importantly, we'll save lives. It's just going to make people live longer and be a lot healthier. I think that's really what you're looking to do.
Yeah, can you believe this guy? Deferring to the Wicked of Oz, and because he shakes his head that they agree that they know what they're talking about, and then he can say that he agreed with it, and we have to have it. He doesn't understand what it is, but we have to have it. He doesn't want his records out, but he doesn't care that they're out. He, I guess, prefers records being out, yet he won't release or do the forensics on the Epstein case. He won't study that anymore. He won't actually work to make sure that the other files are released. The main shocking thing for me was the sheer ignorance of the subject matter that he's involved with. And he was just touching the surface. I've touched all these before, not this particular system that's now out. Remember, he did say you've heard it before. Yeah, you certainly have heard me talking about this health, so-called health. How healthy were you during the great COVID swindle? Your health, their health says, remember, health one. We've talked about this as well. It's all now coagulated into a big blood clot. And I have a link for you to, as we move through, what's he talking about? The Wicked of Oz. White House and the CMS launch Health Tech Ecosystem Initiative to expand use of the digital health with a focus on consumers. And I want you to pay attention how little they talk about you as a patient. And I want to point out, there's so many words here that the euphemism, they talk about a provider. They don't really talk about your doctor. They're just a provider. Well, are they a provider, actually? What do you actually find out that this is? They're talking towards systems, like insurance systems. You're just a consumer. This is not about your health, actually. But digital health, they talk about. Do you hear that? They're to expand the use of digital health. Not for your health. Remember Obamacare. Remember the death committees. This is where they're now got it working. It's now put in place. President Donald Trump spoke about a new health data sharing initiative at the White House on Wednesday afternoon, seated next to Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., CMS Administrator Mehmet Oz, the CMS Advisor and DOGE Administrator Amy Gleason, and AI and Crypto Czar David Sachs. Quote, for decades, bureaucrats and entrenched interests buried health data and blocked patients from taking control of their health, said HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. That ends today. How many fraudulent statements are in that? It's almost hard to begin to know where to begin with these guys. We're tearing down digital walls. I mean, really, on and up. Are they tearing down digital walls? Are you in a digital wall now that you're escaping from? No, they're building that digital gulag. That Siberian gulag is being built right for you, and are you in control of it is the main part. Are you the one that you're going to have your, is it your data when you hand it over? And rebuilding the health system that serves the people. This is how we begin to make America healthy again. And there's not a lot, when you look at the actions, there's not a lot going to make America healthy again. It's just worsening the problem before. They're claiming that giving your private health data to big tech allows the patient to take control is the same problem you all experienced or witnessed when the government took control of you during the great COVID swindle. This is just an extension. As we read, the players involved, Palantir's ex-Intel head, Gregory Barcaccio, is now managing a $70 billion Bravo dollar IT budget, the digital keys to nearly every government system. A comment here on the link through ex-Twitter by Jason Bosler. When the guy who builds the tools to watch you runs a system that controls us, privacy isn't just a risk, it's already gone. How long have we been talking about this? And it's happening. It's right here on us. I'm encouraged just a little tad bit. I don't know how long it's going to last. He says it's opt-in. Trump said it's opt-in. Don't know how long that's going to last, but that's a good thing. How do you not opt-in? You don't have all the infrastructure connections. That's for sure. You don't use the app. But what happens when they start incorporating it in your system like they're doing in Russia? So it's not going to be so simple to avoid this as we move in through the future and possibly Trump is gone. But we can't say, hey, Trump, you said. President Donald Trump has named Palantir's former head of intelligence and investigations, Gregory Barcaccio, as the new federal chief information officer. Barcaccio announced the position in Lincoln Friday and reportedly started the new role Monday. He is the latest White House leader to have a connection to Peter Thiel, the founder of Palantir and PayPal. Thiel has close ties to Trump and many leaders inside the White House, most notably Elon Musk. Trump tapped Musk to oversee the Department of Governmental Efficiency to reduce the federal spending, DOGE, which was stood up by an executive order signed by Trump last week, is aligned with the U.S. Digital Services. I've read all about this and where this was going and what that was setting up, and again, the reorganization that was going to happen around it. Barcaccio spent 10 years at Palantir, where he started in 2010 as a government account manager. He rose in the ranks as a core operations lead, then security lead, before leading the intelligence and investigations unit. The keys to the digital kingdom in this guy right here. He was with Palantir since 2010. If you think these folks had just showed up last week. And what is of the dozens and dozens of articles I could talk about, again, there could be a whole show on articles of potential of the hacks and the problems and the vulnerabilities in digital. I'll just tell you one, you know, things you might least suspect and how fast it can get out. One article talking about the T app. Again, they're going to use an app to do this. The T app leak shows why UK's digital ID age verification laws are dangerous. And in some of these, the words that are written, I read these to you, these words don't even cover, dangerous doesn't cover how bad it is, how threatening this is, how vulnerable we are. what the people on the other side of the digital controls will and can and will do. The UK's Online Safety Act legislation, marketed as a safety net for children, was rolled out with all the foresight of a toddler launching a space program. You heard Trump. You got that worked out? Oh, they said, yeah, okay, because I don't want to know about it. I don't want to know about all the wrong things that are going on. Now, any site hosting a potentially harmful content could be required to collect real-world ID, face scans, or official documents from users. What could go wrong? Ask T, the woman-centric dating gossip app that went viral by promising empowerment, then face-planted into one of the most dangerous data breaches of the year. Their Firebase server, housing tens of thousands of selfies and government-issued IDs, was left wide open to anyone with a link. This is the real-world consequence of lawmakers selling digital ID mandates as a solution to online harm. Private companies getting access to sensitive personal data with all the discretion of a parade float, and then dropping it into the laps of the entire internet. Let's pause for a moment and appreciate the cosmic genius it takes to build an app allegedly designed to protect women and then expose all of their private data to the world with the finesse of a first-time hacker copying a URL. T, the dating app that rocketed to the top of the app store by selling anonymity, safety, and empowerment before face-planting into the Firebase server floor, spraying driver's licenses and selfies like a busted confetti cannon. If you missed it, here's the elevator pitch from the Seventh Circle InfoSec Hell. T lets women upload photos, names, and backstories of men they're dating or avoiding, tagging them as green flags or red flags, like they're judging a homecoming parade. This was already a privacy demolition derby waiting to happen. But T wasn't satisfied with sketchy, crowdsourced accusations and anonymous callouts. It had a bigger goal: make sure that only verified women could participate. And how do you verify womanhood in the 21st century? Naturally, you demand a selfie and a government-issued ID. Nothing says safe space like giving your face and a passport to a fuzzy gossip app running by a people who store it in a publicly accessible Firebase bucket. No login, no password, no shame. The data leak erupted. Users on Fortran stumbled across the open database and wasted no time slurping up tens of thousands of selfie driver's licenses, even private messages, no encryption, no metadata scrubbing. Some uploads still contained geolocation data, meaning anyone who clicked submit, and you do submit, had essential, remember, Trump said, you just click a button. It won't be a button. It's going to be a graphic that you're going to think you're clicking. But anyway, submit yourself. You submit. Had essentially handed over a real-time breadcrumb trail to their front door. T's disaster is less a standalone embarrassment and more like a blinking red billboard advertising the idiocy of digital ID verification as a privacy safeguard. The idea sounds good in committee rooms and on tech conference stages. Require people to upload real ID to confirm their identity online, and magically the trolls vanish, the bots disintegrate, and your app becomes a utopia of civil discourse and polite dating. Except no. What you actually get is a surveillance regime that centralizes priceless identity data in systems so brittle they buckle under the weight of a URL request. T didn't suffer a breach because of a masterful hack. It got busted because it left the front door open and taped the key to the welcome mat. Mistakes always happen and hacks are common, which is why platforms should be collecting as little data as possible, and digital ID requirements are a dangerous idea. I keep biting my tongue. I want to go off back to the Trump thing, the CMS. How much information are you giving in that system? It's going to many, many corporations. And it's not like this practice is going away. It's being enshrined into law. The UK's shiny new Online Safety Act is a sort of performative legislation that gives regulators a warm and fuzzy feeling without the burden of logic, touted as a noble effort to protect children and users from online harms. It mandates sweeping age verification that essentially forces everyone, kids, adults, and unlucky DOD employees, to hand over their ID to participate in the most mundane corners of the internet. T's breach is a preview. The Online Safety Act can easily turn every minor app and niche site into a low-rent surveillance node, warehousing ID scans and facial data with about the same level of sophistication T showed. So it's today's T and tomorrow your digital health ecosystem. From what I can tell, Trump doesn't know a thing about this, I guess. Not a thing. And don't forget, International Health One is already running, right? So I pointed this out as well. The CDC and Health One, I gave you the links, go read all about that. That's international, like your international codes for your buildings and all this other stuff. It's already international, already functioning. And that's going to be built right into that. The system that they're putting in, the CMS system, is being built right onto that. And no, certainly no one's going to talk about it. But Trump doesn't know about it anyway, so it really doesn't matter, does it? Apple, among companies teaming up with Next Generation Digital Health Ecosystem. Remember I told you a long time ago the EPA was worried about ecosystems? They're not talking about nature. They're talking about these ecosystems. You getting it now? You get the word play? During the White House, make health tech great again. Boy, did they have this thing coming and going way before this candidacy. They had this make stuff great again, didn't they? Now it's this. Make health tech great. Health tech great. Not you. Not your health. Health tech great. And let me just draw it a little bit more. These corporations don't have an obligation to you. They have an obligation to their shareholder to do what? Make profit. So when they're making tech great again, they're making profit great again. That's why you're called a consumer and not the patient in these forums. And they deal with everybody the players are dealt with at a corporate level. The event hosted with the Centers of Medical Care, Medicare, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, the CMS, the administration secured commitments from major healthcare and information technology firms, including Apple, Amazon, Anthropic, Google, and OpenAI, to begin laying the foundation for the next generation digital health ecosystem that, quote, will improve patient outcomes, reduce provider burden, and drive values. Do you hear the sustainability here? What are the outcomes? They won't tell you. These are driven by the solutions through innovation and the modernization into the hell we're going to be living in. As I've talked about since 2010, 2011, somewhere in there, all those modernization acts. Reduce provider burden, not your burden, provider burden. And drive value. What value to you? They don't drive health. Well, it's the profit. But the value is also this third party liability to sustainability. That third-party global obligation to maintain. What is the value that they're talking about? They won't tell you. You have to go derive it by reading the documents and where it keeps pointing. More than 60 companies pledged to work collaboratively to deliver results for the American people in the first quarter of 2026. Did they talk to you, American people? Where are those people? And I guess maybe some people think I'm frivolous when I talk like this. That just tells me they haven't read enough. They have not read enough to understand what's actually being told to them. Collaboratively, sustainable development, smart method of how you get buy-in amongst people that are the stakeholders working on the consumer to leverage the public money to work against their object. That consumer who becomes the product that has the obligation to the system and I haven't mentioned it. It didn't come up yet. Maybe it will in a little bit. This is all AI-assisted on top of it all. There's your tech overburden. 21 networks pledged to meet the CMS interoperability framework criteria to become CMS-aligned networks. Let me offer something else that just popped in my mind when I read that. We started out, this was the Medicaid and Medicare. This is the federal system. All and everything is involved in that. Likely we're coming to be a centralized care system coming back out. Like universal health care, universal basic income, that sorts of things. 11 health system providers. See, health system providers, systems, they're providers, they're not your doctors. When they talk about providers, you think it's your doctor. They're not talking about your doctor. 11 health system or providers committed to participate and support patient use. And 7 EHRs committed to facilitate data exchange and help kill the clipboard. And I'm seeing quite a few doctors that I, without knowing them, but watching how they've operated and what they do and what they talk about, they're telling, they're, which I would say is a, they're probably better doctors than most I've seen that are in those systems. They say they like their clipboard. And maybe that's going to be the symbol here coming in. They like, those are the doctors that like their clipboard. Remember, it's opt-in. You may have to find those doctors with a clipboard. In addition, 30 companies pledged to promote the real health outcomes with technology over the coming months. The new tools will use secure digital identity credentials to obtain medical records from CMS-aligned networks that meet the CMS data sharing criteria. According to today's announcement, the apps will assist in the delivery of key services to beneficiaries, including, and I would have to read this in the limited form, diabetes and obesity management, the use of conversational AI assistance to help patient check symptoms, navigate care options, and schedule appointments, among other tasks, and tools that to kill the clipboard, replacing paper intake forms with seamless digital check-in methods and more. And it won't be a button. If you look at what they're doing, they're using your private QR code, as I've predicted years and years ago will be coming. It's you are the product. You have your private QR or universal product code that's yours that you put in front of a device like you do now for your camera with your phones, and it will depict that up. You don't touch a button. Again, with the great Kobe Swindle, don't touch a thing. You're contagious. And so this is who's involved. This is the basics of that system. Again, technology can be good, but when you see who's involved and what they've been doing, and one of the players is Google as well, and they removed their motto to not be evil, and I told you be careful, they're going to be evil. And all these players I've been talking about all these years are all now coagulating like some big blood clot. Right in your neck is what Trump just doesn't know about and just allowed to be foisted upon us. And it's all going through that federal system. So if you're listening carefully up until the time you're maybe incarcerated because you won't, you're quarantined and don't know your local communicable disease law or other due processes or habeas corpus remedies, whether they will work, and I said you better have lots of people that know about these so that you're not the only one standing in the street talking about it, or in your jail cell, or your quarantine. You're going to have an option that it's going to be a little different than the opt-out they talk about. You're not opting out when you don't have it, when you don't participate. Because we have what's coming on, it's not just the people, the corporations that are involved in the data. We have people like Bill Gates being given a green light to secretly spray RNA on food products in America. Bill Gates, through his backing, and Microsoft, remembers right there, that all these companies are right there. I understand Microsoft is now, I think, the second $4 trillion valued company in the world behind NVIDIA, which Trump said he didn't understand and know about either, NVIDIA. So, Bill Gates, lowly Bill Gates. Interesting beginning for this guy. And look where he's gotten now. Bill Gates, through his backing of Flagship Pioneering, has been given the green light to secretly spray synthetic RNA on America's food products with their new venture, Terana Biosciences, designed to infiltrate crops and rewrite their biological functions, raising chilling concerns about unchecked genetic manipulation. So is there a reason why we get behind the woodshed and you hear me talking about the mutations and the problems with the mRNA technology? And we see this going on. It's not such a hard jump to start figuring out what might be happening now with your food. And this guy's been given a license to do this to us. Toronto's Biosciences RNA sprays capable of reprogramming plant biology pose profound risks, including a potential spread to humans through the food chain, echoing fears of corporate and governmental control over life itself with no transparency or accountability. This move, cloaked as agricultural innovation, ignites alarms about the same forces deploying similar technologies on populations, threatening health, autonomy, and the environment under the guise of progress. Remember progressive? That's what they're talking about. That's what this is. And let me remind you, this is BTW RLM 639. Remember when the RNA, mRNA, they were talking about what they included in that synthetic protein they constructed was the identity of who owned that? It was built into it that got replicated, that then got replicated in whoever's cells it got put into as an identifier of the novel product that was then of foreign ownership. History offers grim precedents. From DDT to glyphosate, corporations have repeatedly assured the public of their product's safety. Safe and secure. Remember all this safety stuff. Modernization, that's what this is about. They want to tell you about that. Only for the truth to emerge decades later, buried under lawsuits and ruined lives. With RNA, the stakes are higher. Unlike chemical pesticides, genetic instructions can interact directly with human cells, potentially triggering unforeseen immune response or cellular dysfunction. Do I have to repeat the term, the great Covey swindle? The rise of RNA agriculture isn't just about crops, it's about control. By dominating the genetic code of the food supply, a handful of biotech elites can dictate what grows, what thrives, and what ends up on your plate. And if governments can mandate RNA-based treatments during emergencies, what's stopping them from enforcing RNA-laced food under the banner of public health? Once released, synthetic RNA cannot be recalled. It replicates, spreads, and potentially alters ecosystems in ways we cannot predict. Let's add that digital ecosystem, how it's going to alter that when you think it's about your health. And it's about corporate health. It's about corporate control, the health of that. Remember, the SMART process is to protect itself. They do the monitoring and the assessment, and then they work to transform that system so that it is resilient, not you. In particular, where you become what it feeds on, what the vampire squid eats. The same forces that rushed an experimental vaccine onto the world are now targeting the very foundation of life, the food we eat, the plants we grow, and the natural order they sustain. Not sustainability, don't confuse that. So with this pervasive blissful ignorance that we got to have, let's get back over to them sanctions. Well, what are sanctions causing? The Let Them Eat Cake administration is causing companies and nations to eliminate Western services and monetary obligations. That'll be good for America's no-account, toothless, cardless corporate bottom line. Microsoft restores services to sanctioned India refiner. The U.S. tech giant made the decision after being taken to court by Nayara Energy. Microsoft has resumed providing critical digital services to Indian refiner Nayara Energy after the latter sued the U.S. tech giant in the Delhi High Court. Now, how are you going to feel when you have to sue Microsoft when it turns you off on your CMS system, your health system, or that's tied over to your income, and you're not a country, a big enough country with a big enough purpose? You're going to get that back, or you're in a system where the court, like they did in the great Kobe swindle, washed its hands for 3 years over the fraud that it was seeing that would not touch it. Nayara and a company partly owned by Russia's Rosneft told the court on Monday that Microsoft had restricted its access to data, proprietary tools, and products on account of the European Union's sanctions. Okay, what did I say about Health One being international? Everybody's in the same boat. These reports I read are telling us a future. They're telling us of dynamics in the system of things that are coming. They're not out there. They're not for somebody else. They're soon to be for us. Microsoft is committed to supporting all of its customers in India and worldwide and has restored services to Nayara, the company said in a statement on Wednesday. We are engaged in ongoing discussions with the European Union towards service continuity for the organization. Whatever negotiating with the EU has to do with an American company in its service contracts with an Indian company, I don't know. But here is the fine print. The court granted the company the liberty to approach it again should similar grievances arise, according to the report. Nayara had requested an interim injunction and the resumption of Microsoft services to protect its rights and ensure uninterrupted access to critical digital infrastructure, maybe like your CMS account. The company said in a statement on Tuesday that Microsoft's decision set a dangerous precedent for corporate overreach and raises serious concerns regarding its implications on India's energy ecosystem. What about your health ecosystem? What about your life ecosystem? They're in someone else's hands. Set a dangerous precedent, just like the U.S. did when it weaponized the dollar. The result? Just like what caused the purported multipolarity. The refiner has meanwhile begun migrating the domestic digital service providers to ensure business continuity, according to a report in the Mint newspaper. It had initiated the legal action to obtain urgent relief while pursuing broader strategic transitions to alternative service providers, the report added. You try to do that with this new system that Trump doesn't know about that he's imposing upon you. And this is about the computers and the operating systems. So this is another warning to all of us that just like all y'all should be migrating to Linux. For free now, you can get those distros for free, those distributions for free, and stop feeding the corporate beast the U.S. government uses against us. And remember, Linux is on those servers, it runs most of those servers. Not everything is Microsoft or profited to Bill Gates to go ruin our lives in other ways. And also, contrary to his duty to know, Trump's blissful ignorance about the law here, always, and as I've been pointing out, Trump loses third ruling in a row on birthright citizenship. Judge agrees ending the protections is unconstitutional. And so we're back to this real serious problem with Trump. He doesn't know, he doesn't care about the law, he's going to press whatever retaliatory thing he thinks is going to work for his object. Not whether or not it's really going to work for you, while he talks about working for you. A federal judge on Friday blocked the Trump administration from ending birthright citizenship for children of parents who are in the U.S. illegally, issuing the third court ruling blocking the birthright order nationwide since a key Supreme Court decision in June. The U.S. District Judge Leo Sorokin joining another district court as well as an appellate panel of judges found that the nationwide injunction granted to more than a dozen states remains in force under an exception to the Supreme Court ruling. The decision restricted the power of a lower court judges to issue nationwide injunctions. Sorokin acknowledged his order would not be the last word of birthright citizenship, acknowledging the final decision will come from the Supreme Court. But in the meantime, for purposes of this lawsuit, at this juncture, the executive order is unconstitutional, the ruling says. The administration has not yet appealed any of the recent court rulings. Trump's efforts to deny citizenship to children born to parents who are in the country illegally or temporarily will remain blocked unless the Supreme Court says otherwise. And in this story, I'm going to highlight again, you're watching the dysfunction of the judiciary. These district judges are supposed to, or they're presumed to be telling you the law when they give a decision. Here now, everybody's waiting on what the Supreme Court's going to do. Why do we even have the lower courts? Is a problem in our judicial branch. And regarding all this health and feeding yourself with adequate vitamin D being very important for your health, we'd expect more help from the government. But government and big tech intend to interfere so that they can AI assist your lingering death care, and they'll do that until you stop it. As we see in this article, U.S. sun dimming experiment halted after backlash over cloud-making machine. Scientists in the United States were planning a large-scale experiment to dim sunlight with seawater clouds, but initial testing of the technology was halted due to the disagreement from local authorities. A group of researchers in California received backlash last year after a canceled experiment on the decommissioned aircraft carrier to test a cloud-making machine, but they were planning a much larger and riskier study of seawater spray equipment that would eventually be used to dim the sun's rays, the publication said. Although researchers were initially able to secure government funding for their work and plan to gain access to government ships and aircraft, after the initial test failed, they were forced to admit that they would not be able to secure significant support from local governments, it said. The publication noted that the researchers had discussed with sponsors and consultants conducting a cloud-making test over an area of 10,000 square kilometers off the western coast of North America, Chile, and the coast of South Central Africa. Also, for those of you thinking Trump does not believe in climate change, or the U.S. government has somehow abandoned this woke, heretical objective, and you didn't see the Republican majority legislate it out of existence either, did you? Do people think I talk politics behind the woodshed? All these people are an existential threat to your life and future. Is your life political? Yes or no? Yes or no, the answer does not matter, because life is not a spectator sport. Whether yes or no, there are people in the world that use government, that use fraud and extortion to adversely affect your life, a presumption of right, that they get their way when you stay quiet, providing the all-important consent of the governed that they need. So am I learning you about politics behind the woodshed? Or about how organized criminals under color of law use fraud, extortion, and worse to infringe upon your life legally to their private profit, even if it kills you? Is that politics or piracy? And either way, what are you going to do about that? And what else did Trump's death care harm people with at warp speed? Breaking mRNA injections induce severe, long-lasting genetic disruption linked to cancer and chronic disease. Please tie these together in the last RNA discussion and Bill Gates' license he gets. Before I go on too far on this, remember the sun, the local governments, and I told you a long time ago under Title 50, they're supposed to give you a notice and you can answer to that. That's probably exactly, I'm going to say probably exactly what they did. Otherwise, there was no notice to the local government to be able to respond, but the local governments did. Somebody got notice. So there's how you start stopping that. There was an example right there. I didn't want to leave that without reminding you. I've talked about this for a long, long time now. Back into this. What Trump don't know, but he'll put at warp speed. In a groundbreaking landmark study, synthetic mRNA vaccines and transcriptomic dysregulation evidence from the new onset adverse events and cancer post-vaccination, we discovered that COVID-19 mRNA injections can trigger profound long-lasting genetic dysregulation in individuals who develop new-onset adverse events or cancer following vaccination. Now remember, Trump said that the new CMS system is what we need. Like he said, we needed the vaccine at warp speed. Using high-resolution RNA sequencing of blood samples and differential gene expression analysis, we found that COVID-19 vaccines, in quotes here, severely disrupted the expression of thousands of genes, inducing mitochondrial failure, immune system reprogramming, and oncogenic activation that persisted for months to years after injection. From the findings section, mRNA vaccines trigger transcriptomic chaos. Both vaccine-injured groups showed massive gene dysregulation compared to healthy controls, hundreds of genes up or down-regulated, especially in pathways tied to mitochondrial dysfunction, protein folding, there's your prion problem, and degradation stress, ribosomal overload, and nonsense-mediated decay, chronic systemic inflation, oncogenic activation, and tumor suppressor suppression. To our knowledge, this is the first study to show long-term genetic disruption in individuals harmed by the COVID-19 mRNA injections. These findings strongly suggest mRNA vaccines can induce gene expression profiles consistent with tumor formation and chronic disease. mRNA-vaccinated individuals may be at heightened risk of cancer, immune dysfunction, and inflammatory disorders. The synthetic mRNA and long-lasting spike protein appear to create sustained cellular stress that disrupts normal genetic regulation. Signatures suggest potential reverse transcription of vaccine mRNA and persistence of plasmid DNA, raising concern for long-term transcriptional interference or possible genomic integration. It's time for the immediate withdrawal of these dangerous gene therapies to protect the remaining less than 20% of the population still considering booster doses. Now, this is the harm that Trump causes when, and being gracious to him, he doesn't know anything. How much harm does he cause intentionally when he does know? And I think Palestine is a good measure. The peace faker will commit genocide and allow genocide to be committed, right? Health Tech Ecosystem Initiative? How about it, Palantir? You are a frontline offender. And I'll read the conclusion to the study. You can get that link in the Blogcaster or wherever Sound Minds posts the link tree to get to this if you haven't found it yourself. Synthetic mRNA vaccines and transcriptomic dysregulation evidence from new-onset adverse events and cancers post-vaccination. Again, there was no such thing. It was the implementation of a bioweapon, and it's likely why we're seeing all these harms. It wasn't made to kill people off like we think of a bioweapon. It's made to harm you over time, weaken society. And if you get back into that CMS system and they watch everything that's going on, they can manage you from cradle to grave as they want to, and then they end your life when they need your organs. Conclusions. The observed transcriptomic profiles indicate persistent cellular stress responses, mitochondrial dysfunction, immune dysregulation following exposure to mRNA vaccines, potentially in susceptible individuals, shared and distinct molecular signatures in both cohorts demonstrate underlying mechanisms contributing to post-vaccination symptomatology and the complications, including oncogenesis and or progression of malignant disease. These findings underscore the need for deeper investigation into long-term safety of mRNA vaccines and a host response variability. But I thought they said they were safe and effective, and I told you, yes, they are, but it's not the type of safe and effective for we the people. It's safe for the company to attack you. They're going to be immune, and it's effective. Look at how harmed you are. And another problem that was being developed as the studies now are coming out, just a set of ex-Twitter links that you can need to look at the charts. You can look at this yourself, get the information that you need. Someone has been working on this, charting increasing mortality, the excess natural cause mortality in vaccinal generations of 0 to 5 years old of vaccinated mothers. You can look at the chart, watch this thread when you get it. He has another chart, infants less than 5 years old do not die of environmental lifestyle contributions. They die of systemic disruption. That's another problem that developed right now. We have never seen this before. It's pretty shocking to watch the one chart right after the vaccination starts. You watch a stair-stepping of increased mortality in 0 to 5 year olds. In another ex-Twitter post, I'll just read the header. You, again, get the link and go read it. Go look at the chart. Find the information for yourself. The poster, Ethical Skeptic, says, at this point, I really don't care what shallow reasoning you bring to counter this data. Have run hundreds upon hundreds of DFT inflection charts with diverse ICD mortality sources and indices, and they either are flat, normal, or they inflect a week 14 of 2021. At this point, I don't really care what shallow reasoning you bring to counter the data. The naysayers and the medical establishment are just dead wrong and deadly. The mRNA vaccine was done extraordinary damage to the U.S. population and those born to vaccinated moms. Most of us will not outlive this damage effect that Trump was oblivious to, didn't care about, and didn't want to know about. You just heard about the system. Well, you don't want to know what the problems are. And also, President, I know nothing, Trump. Aggressive mandate of COVID vaccines was probably a bad idea. A new study reveals WHO mandated blanket vaccination saved fewer lives than expected. But this wasn't merely aggressive, it was criminal, pursuant to local communicable disease law everywhere. I don't mean in your country, I mean in all countries that have communicable disease law. Being criminal, it wasn't only possibly a bad idea. There can be no doubt it was a very bad idea, very bad, the worst. Speaking smaller words for Trump, so he can understand. Very bad. Not beautiful. The World Health Organization claimed that jabs prevented 14.4 million deaths just in the first year, with some estimating up to 20 million. However, new research by Stanford University and Italian doctors revealed the true number is closer to 2.5 million. Now, how could they possibly know that when it was not a vaccine that was shot around the world at warp speed? Being a bioweapon, they should be looking at the deaths it caused, right? And how did they differentiate those people saved from death due to the seasonal flu? Well, wait. Seasonal flu all but disappeared those years, didn't it? And there is no vaccine for the seasonal flu either, right? So how are those saved by a vaccine determined? Let us listen to the word salad of the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization, Bill Gates-sponsored, Gavi, on how. Broadly, the impact of vaccines is calculated by projecting, it's like you live in a hologram, projecting what a world with vaccines would look like in terms of disease, then comparing that to the actual disease burden. The difference we see is the health impact of vaccines, says Kathy Gaythorpe, School of Public Health, Imperial College London, research lead at the VMC. So it's made up of a projection, like shadow figures, of the Kerygiosis Theater adjacent the Grand Kabuki. So now we know the people at Stanford University and the Italian doctors doing this study are either on the take, or jab harmed and suffering delusions or cognitive failure. So it shouldn't surprise us when we read that there have been growing concerns over its harms, particularly for young people, and how it may not be worth it for the population who is at a lower risk of death. U.S. scientists from Yale University identified an alarming syndrome linked to mRNA jabs, those made by the likes of Pfizer and Moderna, called post-vaccination syndrome. The condition appears to cause brain fog, dizziness, tinnitus, and exercise intolerance, the researchers reported. Some sufferers also show distinct biological changes, including differences in immune cells and the presence of coronavirus proteins in their blood years after taking the shot. The condition is also said to increase the risk of reawakening a dormant virus called Epstein-Barr, which can cause flu-like symptoms, swollen lymph nodes, and nerve issues. And don't forget, we heard some people responding with that during the beginnings of those first salvos of the warp speed attack. In June, manufacturers added warnings for myocarditis and pericarditis, and potentially dangerous inflammation of the heart muscle. It comes as more than 17,000 Brits now claim that they have been injured or have loved ones killed by COVID jab, according to latest government data. But safe and effective, folks. Again, they're not talking about your health. They're talking about their health. And because of their mandate of perpetual aggression, the Netherlands lists Israel as a national security threat. The state of Israel has been listed by the Dutch government's counterterrorism agency as a threatening state actor alongside Iran, Russia, and Turkey. And we can read again another link that you can find. The Dutch security agency says Israel is a threat to national security. The National Coordinator for Security and Counterterrorism issued a document titled Assessment of Threats from State Actors, which points to efforts by Israel to manipulate Dutch public opinion and influence political decision-making through disinformation campaigns. Does that sound familiar, folks? All y'all in America? Sound familiar at all? Just a little bit. The intelligence warning by NCTV, the principal Dutch agency responsible for the assessment of threats to national security, comes in the wake of the violence and the mayhem in Amsterdam in November 2024 involving supporters of the controversial Israeli football club Maccabi Tel Aviv FC. The fan base of Maccabi Tel Aviv is known to include ultra-far-right groups. And prior to the violent confrontation between the Israeli fans and locals, Maccabi fans were filmed in Amsterdam pulling Palestinian flags from houses, vandalizing property, and raising chants like death to Arabs. Since Israel started its war on Gaza and ensuing humanitarian crisis in the Palestinian territory, there has been significant shift in relations between Amsterdam and Tel Aviv. The Dutch government has become increasingly vocal in its criticism of Israeli actions in Gaza and have called for an immediate ceasefire. The Netherlands has been among the EU nations alongside Ireland and Spain, which have publicly urged that the Brussels and reassess its ties with Israel, stating that Israel has violated human rights conditions under the EU-Israeli Association Agreement. Furthermore, in a significant development, the Hague Court of Appeal in February of 2024 ordered the Dutch government to stop exporting parts for F-35 fighters to Israel, citing a clear risk that these weapons could be used to violate international humanitarian law. Public opinion in the Netherlands has also shifted considerably, with recent surveys indicating a significant increase in unfavorable views of Israel and growing proportion of Dutch citizens supporting a more critical stance toward Israel's policies, even if it entails suspending economic or military cooperation. However, the Netherlands continues to advocate for a two-state solution with a secure Israel and an independent democratic and viable Palestinian state coexisting side by side in peace. Well, the two-state hypocrisy held out a little while anyway. Hegseth abruptly pulls Pentagon officials from Globalist Aspen Conference. The forum will host other Trump officials, Adam Boehler, presidential envoy for hostage response, and Tom Barrack, Turkey and Syria envoy. So this means the United States is not pulling out completely. So Trump's going to participate with this globalist organization through other representation. Again, we're not cutting clean the United States from the globalists at all, ever. I don't see it. I haven't seen it once. I told you, however, it looks like Trump is cutting this. He's onshoring what he cuts away. Look what they did. The WHO wanted to get this universal identity health stuff going. He cuts out the WHO, but they install that right in the United States. Here, they cut away, supposedly cut away the military, but he's going to bring in some more people. Military commanders were set to speak of the conference, which begins on Tuesday, as has been tradition through Republican and Democratic administrations. Several officials, including the Navy Secretary John Fallon, Fallon, Deputy Secretary of Defense for Research and Engineering Emil Michael, and Director of the Defense Innovation Unit, Doug Beck, and a number of other senior military officials had arrived at the event and were scheduled to speak, but the ban was imposed less than 24 hours before the forum began in Aspen. Pentagon spokesman Kingsley Wilson told Just the News the secretary's office believes the conference, quote, promotes the evil of globalism, disdain for our great country, and hatred for the President of the United States. So what are the people being replaced with? And why? Wilson added the DOD has no interest in legitimizing an organization that has invited former officials who have been the architects of chaos abroad and failure at home, as said by the Let Them Eat Chaos administration. Secretary Pete Hegseth pulled senior Defense Department officials from Aspen Security Conference for promoting the evil of globalism. But Trump is still legitimizing, promoting, and not eliminating participation and is embracing and onshoring the evil of globalism at home. And I've been exposing that this fact episode after episode. Trump is the architect of the Let Them Eat Chaos at home and abroad. And how much longer is we the people going to be entertained, even duped, by this clown show, Wrinkles? And putting up another wrinkle into the atomic fabric space, North Korea demands U.S. recognize it as a nuclear power. Kim Yo-young, the sister of the country's leader, says the rapport between her brother and Donald Trump is not a pretense to push denuclearization. The U.S. must acknowledge that North Korea has permanently become a nuclear-armed nation, Kim Yo-young, the sister of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, and a high-ranking official in the Workers' Party of Korea, has said. She also warned that the personal ties between her brother and U.S. President Donald Trump should not be used to compel Pyongyang to denuclearize. In a statement published in the state-run Korean Central News Agency on Tuesday, Kim Yo-young, who is a vice department director of the party's Central Committee, cautioned that any future dialogue should be based on, quote, the recognition of the irreversible position of the DPRK as a nuclear weapons state. North Korea is estimated to have about 50 nuclear weapons and insists that the arsenal is a vital deterrent against the potential incursion by the United States and South Korea, which regularly holds military drills near its borders. So if the ultimatum state of America won't recognize North Korea with 50 nuclear weapons, nuclear armed, why would we expect it to recognize the illegally belligerent occupying force rogue nuclear armed state of Israel with up to 200 or more? Trump met Kim Jong-un three times between 2018 and 2019 in an effort to negotiate North Korea's denuclearization in exchange for security guarantees and economic relief. Kind of like a deal with the devil with this guy, isn't it? Not Kim Jong-un. Nope, the other guy. Despite the unprecedented diplomacy, no lasting deal has reached and talks stalled. So much for the art of the deal. Proving despite the lack of formal international recognition, the ultimatum states of America stand do recognize nuclear armed countries, but deny formal open recognition of the fact. So the various federal administrations can violate federal and international law as they please. In the case of Israel, despite nuclear-armed North Korea being sanctioned under that law, the U.S. government, through a fraudulent fiat monetary system, it blames an unrepresented extorted population for, fund a rogue nuclear-armed political movement, contrary to law and without any sanction, even to the extent of being complicit in a genocide in Palestine. Right, Donald? From the river to the sea, casino and Kushner high-rise water theme park, Trumpenstein? And also aiding and abetting the psychopaths running that rogue political movement under color of a state to threaten y'all at home with attacks and ostensibly by the brown people, right, 9/11 survivors, and you dancing Israelis? But in this article, we see the nuances of diplomacy and international law, but they are very important still. They mean something to someone, if not Trump or the United States warmongers. Or that diplomacy doesn't mean a deal, then we can derive a greater understanding and knowing about diplomacy and international norms or their absence in a particular situation, and maybe how ultimatum stand is misinforming its people to keep them compliant and obedient. Because this worldly condition where international norms are always relevant, in particular where breached, the part that our meat suit is subject to is not a spectator sport. In the international arena, the nation today that is not nuclear armed is likely to be invaded. Negotiating for disarmament means not only recognition of the nuclear arms, despite North Korea's complaint, but also that the negotiator demanding disarmament is not a peacemaker. The atomic genie truly is out of the bottle. Post-Cain killing Abel and the Prince of Peace. No, not the wannabes. The Prince of Peace, that biting peace between our hearts and our Creator that cannot be taken away, is not fully embraced. And something not fully embraced by many governments, such as North Korea, is your freedom of expression. And an elite police squad that monitors anti-migrant posts on social media. Concerns for free speech mount as Home Office creates team to flag signs of potential unrest. The new unit called the National Internet Intelligence Investigations Team will work out of the National Police Coordination Center in Westminster. It follows criticism of the authorities for what some regard as a heavy-handed approach to social media, including a judge's decision to jail Lucy Connolly, a mother of one who is married to a conservative counselor, for 31 months over an inflammatory post in the wake of a Southport attacks. The NPOCC provides the central planning for forces across the country when dealing with nationally significant protests and disorder. It also led Operation Tala, the nationwide police response to the COVID pandemic, which included the enforcement of lockdown rules. The division assembled by the Home Office will aim to, quote, maximize social media intelligence, close quote, gathering after police forces were criticized over their response to last year's riots. It comes amid growing concern that Britain is facing another summer of disorder as protests outside asylums hotels spread. Critics on Saturday night branded the social media plans disturbing and raised concerns over whether they would lead to a restriction of free speech. Chris Philp, the shadow Home Secretary, said, two-tier Keir can't police the streets, so he's trying to police opinions instead. They're setting up a central team to monitor what you post, what you share, what you think, because deep down, they know the public don't buy what they're selling. quote, Labour has stopped pretending to fix Britain and started trying to mute it. This is a prime minister who's happy to turn Britain into a surveillance state, but won't deport foreign criminals, won't patrol high streets, and won't fund frontline policing. Labour are scared of the public. Labour don't trust the public. Labour don't even know the public. Nigel Farage, the Reform UK leader, said, quote, this is the beginning of the state of controlling free speech. It is sinister, dangerous, and must be fought. Reform UK will do just that. In a further sign of dissent over the government's approach to social media, campaigners claimed on Saturday that the posts about anti-migrant protests in the past week have been censored because of new online safety laws. Rebecca Vincent, the interim director of Big Brother Watch, raised the concerns that the new investigations team could stray into policing lawful opinions online. She said, quote, the Home Office plan to create a new police unit to monitor social media is disturbing and eerily reminiscent of the COVID-era counter-disinformation units, which have been the subject of widespread public outcry. It is unclear how the police will use the information they gather or whether they will attempt to interfere with the online content of these Orwellian units have before, but our message is clear. The Ministry of Truth era is over. Quote, resources should be put into proper physical policing to ensure public safety rather than surveilling online speech. The social media intelligence scheme forms part of a Sir Keir's wider crackdown on crime, which aims to restore public confidence in policing. As part of this, police in Devon and Cornwall are embedding specialist antisocial behavior lawyers who will work to fast-track prosecutions. Humberside police are also using real-time mapping to allow patrols to attend, quote, emerging problem locations. A Home Office spokesman said, this new team will help police forces track real-time information and protect communities from incidents and emerging emergencies before they escalate. As part of the government's plan for charge, we are restoring visible neighborhood policing focused on the public's priorities, including halving knife crime and violence against women, clamping down on the theft and antisocial behavior, and ensuring that people can feel safe in their own high streets. But what does any of that have to do with expressing oneself on social media? And as I'm reading through that, are you picking up too? If you attach what they're doing with CMS, the United States, Trump doesn't know anything about, but it's going to put it for your so-called health care, your mental health is involved with that, and your social media will likely be picked up by the AI scrapers to put on your account and put in your data, whether you get to see it or not. Are you watching how this is all integrating? You hear the same words being discussed as excuses in the UK as they are talking here in the United States that Trump uses in his revenge campaigns. And I ran across I found a link to an article. And we were talking about the underlying way they've been funding this whole criminalist syndicate that we're living in called government is through a fiat system. And a link came to me, and I don't usually listen to Tucker Carlson, but there was a Tucker Carlson interview link that I ran across. I think people need to see. I think you need to listen to it. When I went through and listened to it, in general, there was nothing essentially new to me. There was a couple of points that this gentleman, Richard Werner, makes that I thought were very powerful that I think it's good to hear him say. There are some things that are not so good about it I want you to be careful of. I came away with the idea that he's still promoting the fiat system, even though he sounds like he's exposing it. However, what he exposes, I think people need to hear. It is generally what I found in my studies. Title here, Richard Werner Exposes the Evils of the Fed and the Link Between Banking, War, and the CIA. World-renowned economist Richard Werner on Where Money Comes From, Banks Just Created Out of Thin Air, They keep a pile for themselves. And so I think this is important to see. I'm a little skeptical on what part of the outcome is. It's refreshing to hear. He comes out of Japan. He's not a Japanese guy. He was studying there at the time he was made an economics minister. And so this is very important to try and get a handle on what the fiat system is. I would tend to believe, again, as I've been saying, I don't think I've been wrong to suggest and observe how we would get out of this, how we are to walk away from it, is to not use its products. You'll hear him talk a bit about things that I've mentioned about the fiat system, about how the accounting is done, that I think is important for us to hear. He more accurately describes how the Federal Reserve was created. He explains it wasn't supposed to be different and changed like we are now seeing. And so in a two-hour place, there's a lot of information, he says, and he comes by it through studying, making a study that was used by governments. In fact, what bothered me was that we heard some of his contributions, though they were denied to him by the people they used them, like Ben Bernanke, in the quantitative easing. He came up with those things, but he wasn't given credit for it. That's not my problem about it. It's what he then does with his explaining about it and how it solves the problem so that you have prosperity for everybody. And that started to wear on me a little bit. It's like, it's as if he is telling us he's found an answer. It appears by his discussion, it does answer it, but remember, it's still speaking to a fiat system, a fraudulent system. It's as if he's come on to this idea decades ago. Nobody wants to impose it because essentially they'd lose not their jobs as you and I think of jobs. We talk about the control of the government. It would be exposed for really what it is, and it's really a simple fix. They couldn't lead us along. They couldn't destroy our lives like they are. They lose their tangible effect. It starts to show how fraudulent the system really is. It has really no value. It really is what is used by people and agreed to. He exposes, which I thought was empowering a bit, and I mentioned it here, I think it was last episode as well, or at least implied, the local controls would be like through banking. You have your local banks like they're doing in North Dakota. Again, that's still a fiat system, but if we had altered it, as I've been talking also about moving into sound money, what I now put in the ex-Twitter, non-extortionate sound money to address the problem of the continuing extortion government puts on gold and silver at this point. And that also its taxation, the encumbrances that are put on it by government, they need to free, all that has to be freed up. Go to a sound money system. If a local banking system takes that and works with that, it's going to be a lot better. And he refers to the fact that even though he's speaking in the context of fiat, the more banks, the better. What we've been watching is the monopolization of banking. And now actually it's a sidestep. They went into investment houses and they took away the accountability, right? So now that's how BlackRock starts to develop. Vanguard's, the State Streets, they start to come on. These investment houses become banks. They call banks. We need to, that's a fiat system. So with all that little caveat, please bring your own thoughts too. Listen, I found it valuable to at least see a reflection. As I've told you before, you do your study. You hope you're doing it right. It's always cool to watch someone come and discuss a subject matter you've studied, and discussing it in ways that you've identified for yourself was what the sources were telling you was saying, not what you see in the mainstream. So that was what I liked about this more than anything, except I didn't like, I did not like it still supporting the continuation of a fiat system, and it kind of throws a couple big piles of cat litter. He doesn't explain a couple things. He just jumps to a statement, says that solved it, and I'm listening to it, and I'm saying, wait a minute, that didn't really solve our problem there. Like the 2008 didn't get solved that way, actually. And then what about the toxic debt they monetized? That was all more fraud. And so there's a couple big holes in this, but he goes through, Richard Warner goes through, and it seemed to conform with my study, this alternate idea of what's going on and how to resolve, how to deal with the financial system, the monetary system that we are living in and suffering by. Suffering means you are living underneath the harms and you continue in that. You don't stop it. So we have an ability, I believe, to see this. It's not going to be, well, for some people it's going to be mind-blowing a bit on the difference, but it was more for me to track. I don't think my studies were incorrect. My interpretations weren't incorrect. My observations that I tell you are not improper and at this point. And the anomalies that he brings up would be eliminated because they won't be in our life, I suppose I can say, relative to what he believes would make everybody prosperous in a fiat system. I have to say, it is an interesting system. It is a bit of a genius system. And he even talks about how that went from gold certificates, why they did that, then the fractional, if you reserves, if you will, through gold and sound money, and how it was adulterated. He talks about all that. The thing is, don't get lulled into the fact that he's talking that way, and it makes that's the history, but be careful on the conclusions. What he used that for was to reanalyze how the main people that the so-called experts that are put in positions to make decisions, how they incorrectly viewed the system, and made some fundamental errors in their discussions that caused them to do things that were not quite correct, that could be fixed. And a lot more simply than what they have been made into, but I don't necessarily think that's an error. I think that's probably part of the plan. Anyway, so please get the link or go to Tucker Carlson or listen to the interview with Richard Werner and keep your thinking hat on with it. Compare it. Anybody's done the study, compare what he says and qualify. I just confirmed a lot of things that I was reading. Sometimes your sources, you still always have questions. Is it correct? Is it not? It's always a potential question. And if someone comes from the left field, if you will, you never know, and in the system as well, and goes through the same lineage, and it turns out to be the same, it's a bit of a confirmation. So for me, that's what I took away with this. I'm not sold on what he said, although very intelligent guy, he did figure out things. What he figured out, I don't think is wrong. I think he figured it out. And he figured it out in a system that didn't want to hear it, because they have other objectives that they're after. But his conclusion is if you adopt what he says, and you can, again, if you got an opinion on this that's contrary to what I'm saying, and it fulfills and it explains better than what I guess I understood about how the fiat can still work, I'd like to hear about it. But it seemed that there was a couple of gaping holes in what he was saying relative to how he moves it on through, even though what he was saying was not untrue and it looked like it fixed it. The leaps that he made, like not addressing the toxic debt, the monetization, the further fraudulent valuation of something that was they called it toxic, and then they put that back in the system. It's floating around today. In fact, it's what's causing the problems that we have today. There's just so much of this toxicity and fraud going around. They're using it to buy the assets he talks about, but the real assets, which he says is not really where the problem is, and he'll explain that to you as well. So one of the answers was what I found out they did in North Dakota. They made state banks, and that it gives a bit of a buffer. Again, all these things have to be thought about. All these things need to be engaged as we move this thing through, if we so choose. And I tend to want to be as educated as I possibly can or can put toward this. I ask my listener to do the same, at least have an awareness of what's going on. Sometimes we have to make a bad decision based on the facts we have at hand, but it means we can make the best of that bad decision. As I was saying today, you know, we hope best for Trump, but look what's going on, and maybe he does have a jab arm. I don't know. Maybe he was always this egomaniac just looking for an outlet. I don't know. But the guy's a little seemingly more and more unhinged every day. As I've said before, what got me is that he didn't have to be. So why is he? And this is a potential problem for us as well. How do we work through this? We got no choice. And no choice really possible. Again, there is no democracy. You know, we think about democracy. There is no democracy. I've talked about all this. And yet we have to get through this thing. How are we going to do that? It's not such a simple answer. It's not such a simple addressment. And the way I can see international laws working, absolutely have to work our way through we say we the people, those people have to come together. Those people have to come together and work together to work this thing out. This has been BTW RLM 639, and I'll be with you next week. Tech Diffs, or nature willing.
It goes cold, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear.
Sunday. The clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, fierce and free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, lessons to learn. Dose by dose, behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. Hal's words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed. Hide a cantaloupe bass, ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. House words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. So mark the time when Sunday comes. Behind the woodshed, beating drums. House voice, a beacon. Next week, heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.